to Pro Bono Perspectives, live from Brooklyn, where the city never sleeps and purpose is more than just a buzzword. Pro Bono Perspective brings together leaders that have traveled across sectors, industries, and experiences on their path to creating change for the communities in which they live and work. And I'm your host, Danielle Holly, CEO of Common Impact, a national nonprofit that designs skills-based volunteer programs that amplify the impact of social change organizations by harnessing the talents and skills of private sector employees. I am lucky enough to cross paths with these leaders every day through my work with Common Impact and can't wait to bring you behind the scenes to share their stories. This is Danielle Holly, and I am thrilled to be joined here today by Dave Armon, who is the Chief Marketing Officer of 3BL Media and the publisher of CR Magazine and a good friend of mine. Dave is what I describe as a digital media maven who is known across the industry for partnering with progressive brands dedicated to making a positive difference through environmental, social, and governance initiatives. And you want to find out more, just look at the hashtag brands taking stands and you'll find out about the good work that Dave is doing. He began his career as a reporter for United Press International, which we'll learn a little bit more about today, and has since enjoyed a 20-year tenure at PR Newswire, where he has served as president and COO as the company grew to $300 million in revenue. You heard that right. Welcome, Dave. So happy to have you here today.
Well, great to be here, Danielle. Thanks for having me in.
It's wonderful to have you, and it's fun to see you outside of a conference setting.
That's true. We're usually part of the Sustainerati jetting around to conferences, and it's nice to actually be in New York and be in front of this microphone. My UPI job, actually, when I first got out of college, was sort of related to the mic, because I had an unusual childhood in Rochester, New York, as a a free-range child is the way to put it. So mom was done after four other kids, and I came along, and she didn't really pay too much attention to where I was after school, and I was hanging around radio stations. And I actually got put on the air as a traffic reporter when I was 14, and I went through puberty on the air on this top 40 radio station in Rochester, Waxy.
Oh, my goodness.
And so a reporter, eventually I went to the grown-up station. There was like a top, WHAM was this 50,000-watt clear channel station, and this is way pre-internet. It was in the 70s, and they had a farm report in the morning that all the farmers would listen to, like, what's the commodity price for apples or for pig, you know, pork bellies and things like that. So it had a big audience. And Rochester, if you've ever been there, is not the greatest climate in the world. So there are many snow days, and the radio station was sort of the station everyone would listen to for school closings. So once my voice sort of stopped cracking on the air when I was 15, I got put on Wham, and Wham had this UPI bureau in it. And UPI, you know, was a competitor to the Associated Press back in the day, and we were, you know, fighting on breaking news. And the UPI reporter wrote a story about me being too young to drive a car, but still being the traffic reporter telling all these drivers on how to get to work. And it got a lot of play, you know, because it was syndicated.
Right.
And the clips came in from all over the country, and I became fascinated and decided, you know, this business of working in radio once I'm an adult is dumb, because every time the ratings book would come out, they would, like, fire the staff and change format. So I knew already it wasn't a stable job. And this UPI thing seemed so cool. So I went to school based on that article to be a journalist.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Where can we find those clips?
I have some embarrassing old traffic reports in my archive. Yes.
So we will share with our listeners.
You can, yes, I'll talk about that. The interchange that used to get all backed up in Rochester was the Can of Worms. And they so there were always, you know, tractor trailers skidding off the road, and it was a fun childhood.
Yeah.
And then and the UPI was interesting from a purpose standpoint, because one of the stories I covered, I spent, I don't know, five or six, I did an internship with them and worked in Albany, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, but the main bureau that I was in was Rochester, and there were women's rights activists there who called me up and told me that they planned to take off their shirt in Cobbs Hill Park on this date at this time and to bring a photographer, and they're going to get arrested. And so, sure enough, they did that, and we dubbed them the top free seven, and it went to court, and it changed the nudity laws for New York State, because, you know, previously it was discriminatory against women. Men could take off their shirts, but women couldn't.
Right.
And I covered this trial, and they brought, like, the Barbie doll into evidence, and it was, you know, amazing stuff about women and their self-image and marketing and
right.
just and the legal status. I was probably, I don't know, 21 or 22 when I covered that story, but it made me feel there was purpose to reporting, I guess, and you know, more so than just covering the murders and the indictments of the mayor and all the other stuff that goes along with writing news. A lot of it was business news in those days too. But you know, you asked about you were just talking about the career, and that UPI's financial troubles jumped off and got me into PR Newswire. Honestly, UPI was owned by three people while I worked there, and they had two Chapter 11s. And you know, someone rang a bell and said, "Dave, journalism's dying. Move on." So I went on the commercial side over to PR Newswire, right. Working with brands.
Well, it wasn't dying; it was just changing, right? And the format.
It was changing. Yeah.
How did you know? Because when you're 15, 20, most people don't yet know what they want to do in the world and what career is right for them. How did you know? Or what was the moment you knew where, okay, this is not something I just fell into. This is something that I can make a career out of.
Well, that's an interesting question. I guess just having adults respect me as a teenager for showing up, number one, but also for, being competent and then, you know, adding some humor and personality to it and not telling you to, you know, go just sit in the corner and be subservient until you're an adult. Like it was a light bulb moment, I think, that if there was mutual respect in the relationship and there was a need and you were willing to do it. I mean, my first paycheck was $60, you know, from Waxy. I think I got a whopping $140 a week from WHAM. It wasn't the money. Although as a kid, that was better than a paper route.
Right.
But it was more the the contribution of something real.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things that you've said is, particularly when you started your career, there was a deadline every minute mindset. Has that changed as the publishing journalism has changed, or has that gotten worse, or what does that look for you?
Well, I mean, that it also was probably a good use of my skills, right? ADHD yeah. wasn't yet a thing, but it was my thing, you know, and being able to know that, you know, 10 minutes after my first traffic report of the morning, I'm going to have to do another one and then another one and then another one. So it was, you know, maybe not deadline every 10 minutes, every minute, but it was every 10 minutes. And UPI was the same way. There was a competitive element because I wanted to beat, you know, in the traffic job, I wanted to beat Officer Hank, you know, who was flying around in WBBF's right. airplane or Officer Gare in the air on WVOR. So I was always trying to be first. We used CB radios, actually. So
oh
we had, you know, we had like Leatherneck calling in from uh-huh. Route 490 with a report and I was Wambo. There was always a competitive element, and same with UPI, trying to beat the AP on stories. But the deadline every minute thing, I think also just, you know, it's where people are now with Twitter and where they are with posting constantly on social and where a lot of people are and just, scheduling much more in their diaries today because we have electronics that help us keep it all sorted right. than they would have in the old days where they're right. going to say, today's my meeting day, and they do one meeting and that was it. And it's much more frenetic, but I think, you know, I was steeped in it at an early age and it's not at all intimidating.
And when you think about that environment, how do you think, I think of the work that you do and that 3BL does is really substantive and not adding to the noise, but
thank you.
Separate from it. How do you think about that balance? Because you want to keep up, you want to be a influencer, I imagine, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, having a voice on those platforms in the space that we operate in is important. But how do you make sure that you're not just adding to the humdrum and you're providing some of these substances.
Yeah. So for any of the listeners to your podcast, I'm going to just back up and just say what 3BL is. It's everyone probably knows 3BL is triple bottom line, people, planet, and profits, not just profits on the bottom line. And 3BL Media was started in 2009 as a way that brands that were doing great work could and probably talking about it on their own channels, on their you know, their own website and in their own sustainability or CSR report and you know, on their intranet and, you know, with their key stakeholders. But it's not really, in a lot of cases, the work wasn't really being noticed externally very much. So the founders of this business realized, and it's, you know, it's a husband wife team, Greg and Cindy Schneider and, mm-hmm. and Doug Fulton, the CTO, and Reggie, who unfortunately has passed on. All of these guys recognized there was a need, and the only method at the time was kind of your own channels or putting out a press release through one of the commercial newswires, of which, you know, I worked at Pair Newswire for a long time. They're not going to put themselves in a position where they might get ambushed, you know, and someone asks a question that really shows that they're not authentic and not they haven't really invested in it. But you know, as a consumer, I do a lot of research, right? And I'm going to look and see whether NGOs are upset with their behavior and whether there's problems in the supply chain and whether they have great ratings on some of the you know, looking at their greenhouse gas emissions and looking at whether they even put out a GRI report or a SASB report or any kind of documentation that would indicate that they've actually dedicated that they have a plan and that they have resources behind it and that it's, you know, baked into all the company and that they're being transparent. So, you know, that's the kind of research that I would do as a consumer. Mm-hmm. At 3BL, I think when we talk to companies about what they want to do with us and talk about, if they just have, you know, a cause marketing initiative, but they don't have anything more than that, they're never going to invest in what we do because, you know, it's a 52 week a year, you know, 7 day a week kind of platform that we operate. And we encourage clients to put out content on an ongoing basis. And not just around the time that their sustainability report is issued. So if they don't have enough content, you know, that's an indication that they really haven't been doing it that long or they're not, you know, dedicating enough resource to it. And right. We wouldn't be the right channel for them.
Right. Well, and I know 3BL has grown exponentially and Common Impact has as well. I think we're all experiencing what now is CSR and corporate social responsibility, corporate citizenship, moving past being a trend and more of this is a way of doing business, and we're not completely there. But curious what you've seen in terms of the growth of this space and this triple bottom line concept and how you would attribute that to some of the growth that 3BL has seen.
Yeah, I mean, we did a data analysis actually of content distributed through the 3BL platform. So, you know, on a given day, there's like 50 pieces of content now. And you know, it was just, you know, a few dozen back a few years ago and less than that in the beginning. I think in the beginning, it was largely about philanthropy and maybe community relations philanthropy. And then it really moved. And that was like 2009 as the time frame. But then it moved quickly into environmental and into identifying areas in the company that they could be more efficient with and, mm-hmm. you know, not wasting money with throwing things away that they could potentially recycle or sell off and use and you know, installing renewables into their, you know, energy consumption portfolio. And all of that was like probably 2012 to 2015.
Right.
And then there seemed to be a real a light bulb moment about millennials and about the workforce of the future and about, you know, now Gen Z, but back then it was millennials, and that they wanted to work for a purpose-driven company and that the ROI probably is easier to validate around recruitment and retention of employees than it was. I mean, they could easily figure out the energy portfolio and the ROI around the environmental stuff. But the employee stuff was this new right. realization that we now can, you know, if we reduce churn by 1% and you know, it saves a lot of money for companies with people. and that the research that Cone did and that others have done about employees wanting to work for purpose-driven companies was starting to get published. And we just noticed that the content being distributed over the network then was more and more about volunteerism. And then obviously through Common Impact, we're seeing stuff about, you know, volunteerism that is, you know, skills-based, mm-hmm. as opposed to just painting the same wall on the library, right. you know, for the 45th time with a mural.
Right.
We continue to see that trend. What's happened more recently, even in the last year, is that brand activism, mm-hmm. Companies choosing to actually take a position on an environmental or a social topic has become huge, and potentially, you know, passing the volunteerism and the, and the community relations aspect of the content that's going out. We see a lot more companies. We're using the hashtag brands taking stands at 3BL, and yeah. we have a conference on October 23rd through 25th called 3BL Forum, where that will be, you know, the main theme, because it's so important right now, and companies want to get it right. They don't want to, just to your point earlier about authenticity, they don't want to take a stand if they're not really, you know, walking the talk.
Right, exactly. And employees will bring CEOs and senior leadership to task if they're saying one thing but doing something else internally. And I love that hashtag, brands taking stands. And it's really, I think it's a dimension of the question that we were talking about before in terms of, you know, how do you separate the wheat from the chaff on that front, right? Because there are some brands that take stands where you can tell that it's a calculated marketing conversation, right? And I might put Nike in that category.
We're recording this the day, the week of the Nike doubling down on the Colin Kaepernick contract, right?
Exactly, right. And came out with a, I'd say less controversial than is aired, but controversial set of ads that were in support of Colin Kaepernick and his very active stand against the NFL, and the NFL is one of Nike's largest customers, and so clearly, and Nike has been on both sides of social justice issues in the past, and so clearly, and what I think is the really good news from that is that Nike has assessed that there are employees and consumers that are behind this issue and will be net supportive of this. Different from what I think of as a Patagonia or Chobani, where you hear the personal stories of the C-suite of senior leadership, and you know that the belief that they're portraying, that they're taking a stand on, is core to that company's culture. And I think that's where employees and the public will make their decisions on how that elevates the brands that are taking stands, as you say.
Right. So I think the CEO's involvement and personal attachment to an issue, you know, lends to authenticity. Then their challenge is getting the organization to follow. But I think when it's driven grassroots, from inside a company, like that example of Roger Krone from Leidos Corporation, where, right. where an employee, you know, made this tearful plea, and then it resonated, and then it was punctuated by like a meeting with a governor. That's one thing. But the more conversations I've had on this topic, the more I hear that employees are driving this, or that it's a concern about potentially driving employees away if they don't take a stand. Like. Right. I'm talking about like the North Carolina bathroom mm-hmm. bill, right? And you had the NCAA saying we're not going to hold our playoff games in North Carolina if this thing continues. You had in Texas another bathroom bill that IBM reacted to, and you've seen, you know, Brad Smith, the president of Microsoft, taking a lot of stands on these issues, and particularly DACA, right. where his comment was, if you want to go after one of our employees who's a dreamer, you're going to have to come through the Microsoft legal department. Mm-hmm. He's also the general counsel. So I think it's real. I think it's authentic, and they're standing, you know, they have plenty of money to to put behind this, but they have a glow in their brand when that happens too, among, you know, an important constituency, right? There's, you know, three big audiences they're looking at. They're looking at employees, consumers, and investors. I'm sure there's others too. There's, you know, suppliers and other stakeholders, but those are three huge ones. And the employee situation in the United States, you know, is there's just so many skilled workers, and then the battle to get them there. You know, people don't leave these jobs voluntarily unless they don't. You know, the good employees aren't getting fired; they're leaving voluntarily to go to another company that has that's more purpose driven or just fits better with their personal beliefs. Other companies that I think are very authentic on this, Salesforce, mm-hmm. and Angie's List, and the NCAA again in the state of Indiana when the religious freedom bill was passed, that was allowing, you know, a baker who makes wedding cakes to turn down making a cake for a gay couple. That was a big moment. These are early moments in the brand taking stands movement, at least the current one that we're in. I think others that we've seen involved, like gun control, certainly with Dick's Sporting Goods saying we're not going to sell to anyone under 21, and Walmart, you know, echoing the same policy that they had.
And their stock price is going up.
Right, they had a good quarter, mm-hmm. right? Exactly.
Right.
So we're excited to be on the front end of that, and at this conference that we're doing this year, we're featuring Chef Jose Andres, the humanitarian chef and with Think Food Group, but also known for this World Central Kitchen. Mm-hmm. And he served 3.2 million meals, not Chef Andres personally, but he served a good tens of thousands of them in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. And they have scale, and they're, you know, doing this disaster response initiative through food. And he also, you know, gets under the skin of our current president because Chef Andres had a restaurant that was slated to be in the Trump hotel in Washington. And when the anti-immigration rhetoric began, he voided his lease and it went to court. Wow. But he said, I wasn't going to be in that building mm-hmm. under that brand. Right. So it's a really effective and effective for some companies if they're authentic with it and it doesn't tank their business. But to your point, I think the analysis has been really significant on you know, if we do this, you know, what's the net effect 2 years from now, 3 years from now? And Nike clearly did that math. And I don't have any insight into Nike, whether it's, you know, their corporate conscience or whether it's the spreadsheet talking.
Right, exactly. And I think for most of the companies that are coming out, we'll never truly know what the exact calculus was, but there are indicators and we can tell. So tell me about this conference, why people should go, how the heck you think about content, right? Because there's so much content right now. There's so many companies doing amazing things that they all want to talk about. How do you think about curating what is the best, most innovative, what is net new for an audience that comes to this year after year?
Well, I think going back to the ADHD, there's a wonderful colleague of mine named Lynn Filderman. And Lynn was the CMO at America's Charities. She put on a conference that you and I attended for many years called Charities at Work. Mm-hmm. And so I met Lynn through that. And Lynn moved out of DC, moved down to Florida, probably, you know, was officially, you know, semi-retired. And I pulled her out of retirement and said, will you please run 3BL Forum? And she decided, yeah, I'll do it, but I want to do it in my style. So no long form presentations. It was the max you'll get on stage is like 10 minutes to 15 minutes at the most. So we had CEOs, the CEO that won the Lifetime Achievement Award last year, you know, his PR person reached out and was concerned that we were only giving him 10 minutes on stage. And we explained this is like an interview being done by a journalist. John Howell from 3BL Media did the interview, and he writes the Brands Taking Stands newsletter. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, it's very, anything that he was going to say that would have taken a half hour, he could say in 10 minutes if you just stay on point. So that's the key, is that it's very fast-paced presentations with the main, you know, following this main theme of brand activism, but also looking at the new the new willingness by the investment community to look at companies through an ESG lens. Mm-hmm. Larry Fink's letter last year was huge in waking up Wall Street that we expect companies to perform more of a service to humanity than just providing jobs and showing earnings growth quarter after quarter. And so we put the long view as our subcategory of topics. And we have CECP doing a presentation. It's a workshop for companies that want to learn how to present to the financial community their sustainability story. GRI is doing a workshop on that on October 23rd, a pre-conference workshop about trends in reporting. And then we have just, I think it's a dozen CEOs now speaking.
Wow.
The CEO of Aflac is going to speak about these. They've invested in a therapeutic interactive duck.
Yes, Carol Cohn, who was also on this podcast, was talking about this.
Kids use them, and kids who are in cancer hospitals, and they're wonderful. And so we're going to hear that story and why it's his passion as the CEO.
How fantastic. So I want to bring this back to you for a moment.
Sure.
Because these are all of the things that you have helped move and inform. You've been in this industry for a long time, and I ask myself this question a lot as well. What motivates you? What excites you? What still feels new, given your lens on this space and the different roles you've had?
Well, I love the fact that that CSR is no longer as siloed as it has been inside organizations.
Yeah.
That companies that have been at it for a while have sort of gotten the corporate culture to change, and then to realize that this is integral to all functions throughout the company. So they had this weird matrix role before, where they would, have to pull data from 30 people to put a report together. But now it's systematized, and yet these people, after they were successful, they didn't go away and leave these companies. Now they're in, they may be in marketing, or they may be in, some sort of compliance role, but they're still there and they're still having a big impact. So I get charged up going into companies now and realizing that this is real, and that, mm-hmm. Their investment in volunteerism and their investment in, environmental stewardship honestly, the global goals gets me charged up. I wear my pin all the time, with the sustainable development goals. I think that, the content that we see on 3BL Media about that is going up and up and up. And I'm doing a webcast series now where we're interviewing, we're trying to find a company that's attacked each goal to hear how they're doing it and what challenges they're having and who they're partnering with and why they're doing it. So, there's always something new, and that's why I'm getting up in the morning and going to work. I think this is a great market.
Mm-hmm.
It's a growing market.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not ready to retire yet. Getting there, but not ready. So, I value the relationship with people like you and Common Impact and, having these conversations. And this forum in October is going to be a great way, again, to meet and get re-inspired. Because last year's crop of winners were great, but, the stories we've heard from some of these CEOs this year will blow you away.
Really?
When you figure out why they're, what's behind their passion and why they're, why they're putting their neck on the line and taking risks.
So for someone who is looking to have a career like yours or looking to be in this space, what advice would you give them?
Immerse yourself in it. Don't just, I think really research and grab all the content you can and find a few net impact. I think if you're a college kid, I would say join Net Impact, number one. Try to figure out what is your first filter to be around purpose-driven companies,
right.
And then within that, you're going to find banks and soup companies and cleaning products companies and consulting firms, and then you got to figure out where are you a natural fit? Do internships and all of that. I have a mentee and have, had a number of mentees over the years, but, her name is Jaren Alam, and Jaren Got interviewed recently on the topic of being, you know, being undocumented alien and how she, what her journey was like, and she's now very active in nonprofit, and there was a video done with her on This Now, and and it got like a million views.
Wow.
So that's the stuff that inspires me. It's just people around me who have had challenges, who have persevered, and then who are purpose driven and just don't give up.
And get the word out, right?
Yeah, and then they share. Then they're willing to, you know, their network is their family, right? So that's the brilliance of social media now, is that you can have a community, like you mentioned, like the conference circuit that we're on. We don't go there just for business development. We go there because our friends are there.
Right.
And we get re-inspired, and that's I think different about our community. There's an awful lot of open sharing of ideas and candid feedback that I'm not sure every sector has, because so many other sectors are so damn competitive.
Mm-hmm. What's the best part of your day?
I do a swim every morning. That's the best part of my day. And we recently, my two daughters went away to college, and my wife and I got a little cottage a block from the ocean in Rhode Island, and I walk through the dunes and do an ocean swim every morning. That's the best part of my day.
Well, it sounds amazing. I have to say that I know that you do those ocean swims in the New England winter. So there's got to be a little bit of crazy amongst all that brilliance.
There's no sharks. There's no sharks in our pond. No,
it's freezing.
No, well, that's why they make wetsuits. It's fine. I wasn't very athletic growing up, and this is the one thing, even though it's a solo thing, that I enjoy. And then by the time I'm out, I'm able to be social.
All right. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Dave, for joining today and having this conversation. If folks want to find out more about the forum coming up in the fall, where should they go?
Sure. It's 3blforum.com. And then if you want to, you know, email me to get a registration discount, feel free to do that too. I'm D-A-R-M-O-N at 3blmedia.com.
All right. You got it. Thanks. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to Pro Bono Perspectives today. If you like our show and want to learn more, check out our website at www.commonimpact.org. Leave us a review and tell your friends and colleagues about us. Tune into our upcoming episodes to hear from everyday leaders using their skills to help their communities.